sister, Asha, has lost a sister. And if I have it correct, a sister will be laid to rest tomorrow. And that's the reason why she is not here. May, help me, please. Oh, the burial was last week. Oh, she's in Kevna. Oh, I'm a week behind. I was in the Soviet Union. I'm a week behind. So the burial was last week, Thursday. Okay. So the burial was last week, Thursday. Then it's not proper that we do now. I wanted us to show a moment of silence and respect. But it's belated, so we will just think of our minister at this time. We have before us the team from the National Department of Tourism, and they are led today by the Deputy Minister. And also we have the DG with us. We will give you an opportunity to introduce yourself at the opportune time. We will start our deliberations by just going through the process again of introducing ourselves as members of the Select Committee to you. My name is Eddie Makue, and I'm from Gauteng.
Good morning, my name is Vusi Magwebu. I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber. I represent the Northern Cape, and I want to thank the minister in the aeroplane. She made space that my wife and myself could sit next to each other.
Good morning, honorable members, Deputy Minister, DG and official. My name is Mandla Khai, representing the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Moses Titus Mhlanga, representing Mpumalanga.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is James Mthethwa, a permanent delegate from KwaZulu-Natal. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Buimotlan Chep. I'm the member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Jacques Lund, and obviously I will not be sitting here if I'm not a member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We also have with us our support staff, and we also have the Parliamentary Monitoring Group that is ordinarily with us. We also notice our visitors there at the back. We want to welcome you warmly. Appreciate that you are here with us today as we receive this report from the National Department of Tourism. And we will then give over to you Deputy Minister Tabete to do the introductory remarks. We'll follow the normal procedure, honorable members. We'll have the presentation. We'll then give members an opportunity to engage with the presentation. We anticipate a presentation that would last 45 minutes to an hour. We won't do with you, Mr. Zarecha, what we did in the room next door the last time when it was very hot and we didn't give you water and pressurized you with time as well. We have a little bit more of a leeway on time this morning. But let me hand over to you immediately. We'll then, after your presentation, allow the members to raise questions and comments on the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. We're trying to consult with the DG to how we deal with the interventions, but I think I'll just give the opening remarks and then we'll be able to deal with the introduction of the team. But thank you once more. I'm accompanied, as you see, by the Director General. The only, I think, I'm not sure whether it's a flower or thorn or rose. I'm not sure how to call him because he seemed to be the only one with a lot of our DDG's women. And, of course, the symphony. At least we've got...
Of course.
And I think we are here as a team to present to you the annual report and the financial statements for the 2016-17 financial year. And at the end of 2016-17, the department achieved 89% of its targets compared to 84% in the previous year, 2015-16. The Director General and the management team will lead the presentations on achievements of the targets in detail, but I would like to highlight the following for you. One, we implemented a destination and enhancement project at Robben Island and the National Heritage Monument. I think the details will come during the presentations. We supported SMMEs, businesses for market access, and start grading through the tourism incentive program. We concluded arrangements with our partners in Seychelles for the placement of 20 graduates for the National Youth Chess Training Program, specialized in the Somalian. The French cuisine. I think they're there to make sure that they can perfect that. And we implemented the Executive Development Program for Women in Tourism with the University of South Africa. And we've got the numbers, I think, that we graduated for this year. We launched two incubators in Manyelit and Pilanesberg to support tourism SMMEs. The third one is supposed to be coming. We maintained a growth trajectory with regards to international tourist arrivals and jobs sustained by the tourism sector. Sadly, though, Honorable Chair, there are two stubborn areas that we are concerned about. First one is the recent baseline study on the state of transformation in the tourism sector shows that transformation levels in the sector are low. It is a sore point to report that despite the continued growth in the sector, we are not seeing the opportunities and benefits accruing to all. Number two, we also continue to note a decline in domestic tourism figures. In this regard, we are implementing plans with our provincial partners to ensure that we realize the benefit of the domestic market. So we had made a commitment to Parliament who would manage the task assigned to us in a manner that creates public confidence. And we also believe that then that the Portfolio Committee is one of the structures that I think we come here to make sure that we can be accountable to ourselves and make sure that we can then see as to how we can improve in terms of our deliberations and how what is our mandate scope and as well the budget given to us. And as you know, it's not that too much money given to us. But we try our level best with that meager resources that are allocated, and within the fiscal government constraints, we try and make sure that we can do what we can. And we hope that we'll be able to see that in terms of the reports from our DDGs, in terms of their allocation of duties. The 2016-17 and audit, the audit outcome for the department confirms that the department's financial statement are free from material misstatements, no material finding on compliance with legislation, and no performance report and on performance reporting. We've maintained clean administration in order to retain the clean audit outcome achieved in 2015-16. The Auditor General has awarded the accounting officer with the clean audit for 2016-17. And Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I think taking it from there, we thank you for the support we received from this committee so far, and we hope that we'll continue working together, make sure that we can be able to come to you, but also get some advice from yourself as to how you see the process going forward. And I think with the parliamentary system now that you are able to input in terms of the BRRR and other processes, it makes things then much more easier for us to work together closer and see what is working, what is not working, and how can we deal with the problems rather than just pointing fingers. So it is a good process that I think Parliament, I mean, has introduced that within the two houses, and I hope that it will be able to work for us. With those few words, I think I'll hand over to the accounting officer. I'm sure he's one of the happiest accounting officers because of the reports from the Auditor General. Because I think if you're at the helm of administration and you always, you know, pray that things would go the right way, because, but we always like, when things are going okay, it should be the minister and deputy. And that is, I mean, get accolades. But if something is wrong, it must be the accounting officer, because he's the one who's responsible, not us. But we try to maintain a team tourism, I mean, to try and work together and not claim those. But I think we are happy that we have supportive staff and be able to see what you do as the politicians. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to the DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you, DM. I do need to emphasize that the Minister is right. We are as good as the leadership we receive from the political principals. So it's never about us, because we are implementing a strategy that is informed by the direction and policy direction that is given to us. Ours is to implement. But in that implementation, then we must do it well. We are not going to take time. DM has given us the introduction. We will go through the presentation, and we will go through Program 2 first, then Program 3, then Program 4. So we want to do all the substance programs and then come back to Program 1, which will be the final one where we will deal with that and then the financial component of it. But what is important to just flag is that we have which will come through when we deal with Program 1. The DDGs, as they go through the details of the programs, they will also attempt to show the level of impact that we have made. Chairperson was asking us just now, before we started with the session, about the Robben Island project around the retrofitment with regards to energy. They will report about that, but what I can say is that the project was in response to the need for a sustainable means of energy provision within the site itself. They were using a diesel generator. For years they've been using diesel generators. They are not, so you don't necessarily have Eskom in the island. So they are not necessarily part of the grid and so on. Currently, that intervention is saving an amount of 17,000 rands per day in diesel costs. So there is the real impact in terms of what we're doing. And that's not the only thing that we're doing. There are other projects that are underway that include some revampment of the old space that was sort of like the restaurant space and so on. People that are actually being trained as we speak to be exclusive suppliers of memorabilia. And these are ladies from the townships in and around Cape Town. So they are very specific, impactful things that we've done, including some open days where you've seen numbers of people that ordinarily would not have accessed that particular site, being able to actually access. But they will report a lot more on some of the highly impactful things that we have been able to do over this particular period. So I will hand over to DDG Program 2. Let me introduce them first. DM has requested that I introduce them first. So we've got DDG Chetia Shamila, DDG Rampile Murunga, DDG Malan Anemi, and DDG Duma Lulama. These are all the DDG's vulnerable members. At top management, I'm the only male. And at EXCO, which would then include Minister and Deputy Minister, I still remain the only male. And then you bring in the CFO, then we become the only two males. Our CFO, Ralph Ackerman, is the man behind the clean audits and so on, good systems and so on. But of course, all of the colleagues, they are taking full responsibilities for their work, which is what leads to the easier job that then the AG is able to do when they come into the organization. All the things are in place and the systems are in place, so that's how we function. So we'll take program two, Honorable Chairperson, and then we will continue in that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, DM. I'm going to take you through Program 2, which is Policy and Knowledge Services, and in your packs, they are contained on slides 15 to 26. Just an overview, we had 19 targets in our APP last year, 16 of which were achieved, and 3 which we did not achieve fully, but we made significant progress on. I'll talk to the details of three, but just so that you know which ones they were infrastructure projects that we're implementing at Shangoni Gate and Palabore Wild Activity Hub and the Transformation Baseline Study. If you move to page 16, I'm not going to spend much time on these two targets, but the first target relates to the National Tourism Stakeholder Forum that we host once a year, actually. Last year, we actually hosted more than one session because we had a need to consult on a number of different matters. The second one relates to the National Tourism Information Monitoring System, and this is a system that basically is going to collect data related to all tourism businesses in the country. Last year, what was completed was that the regulations for this, which were widely consulted in all 9 provinces, were developed. At this point in time, we're finalizing the modes and the mechanisms of how we might implement the system. As you can imagine, it takes a lot of consultation because it's very confidential information, and it requires cooperation from businesses across our tourism sector. If we could move then to slide 17, the next three targets actually talk to our targets around transformation. The first is the provision of secretariat support to the Charter Council, which was successfully implemented in the year under review. The second relates to the baseline study. And the members of the committee may recall that tourism was one of the first, in fact the first, to align our charter codes for transformation with the new codes that were issued by the DTI. As a result of that, we have to conduct a new baseline study to understand how tourism businesses complied with the new codes. We actually delayed our study in order to really look at the methodology to ensure that the information that we got was verifiable and correct, because it's what we will base our program on transformation on. So we had delays in actually implementing it. The study has subsequently been completed, and I think it will shortly be released for public consumption. The next one really talks to our portal. One of the huge challenges we were told when we did our initial baseline study was that people wanted to procure from what we term empowered suppliers in the legislation, but they were not quite sure where to find them. So this portal really matches suppliers with buyers and is actually functional and operational and has been launched. And in fact, at our Transformation Summit, which was held over the last 2 days, there were many people there who said that they were very delighted. They'd seen the portal in action, and they were very pleased that they had something that would allow them to now buy from empowered suppliers. If we go to slide 19, the next three targets really talk to our program on tourist guiding. These are the faces who share our uniquely South African stories with the world. And we have three programs that we implement. One is for new entrants. The second program is for those guides who are already trained and who actually are expanding their training. And then the third program is a continuous professional development program. Still on slide 19, in last year's program, we implemented our program to capacitate guides in Isimangaliso and the Cradle of Humankind. And we started with our iconic World Heritage Sites because those are must-see destinations for all tourists. At Isimangaliso, we basically trained 8 guides, but we held a seminar with 42 guides and operators, which was part of our attempt to kind of keep them informed and trained. At the Cradle of Humankind, we had 9 trainees and 8 who successfully completed the program. And this was to basically take them to the next level of guiding. If we move to slide 20, we actually trained new entrants at the Elephant Coast region and then in Zululand. And in total, that was an 18 in total. So these are completely new entrants into the guiding field. And then the continuous professional development program, one of the challenges is that this doesn't really exist for guiding to this point. So this was really putting in place a program that allows guides to continuously improve their skills. I'm going to take some time on the next few slides, which relate to the enhancement program that is funded through the Tourism Incentive Program. So slide 21 talks to our Shangoni Gate development, which is in the Kruger National Park. This project is important because it actually improves access for visitors, but it also improves opportunities for communities. We made very significant progress on this project, but there were delays in terms of commencing construction. Those delays were related to actually delays in the EIA process. So at the point that is the 31st of March last year, the EIA process had commenced but hadn't been completed. I'm very pleased to say that the record of decision has been issued by the Department of Environmental Affairs. It was issued on the 9th of September. It's now been circulated to all interested and affected parties, and they had until the 29th of September to provide additional comments. DIA's actually at this point in time finalizing those inputs. The next project, which is contained on slide 22, is the Palaboa Wild Activity Hub, also in the Kruger National Park. Similarly, there were delays in commencing construction. What has happened subsequent to the 31st of March is that there have been public participation meetings concluded in June. The revised or application for the actual EIA has now been submitted to the department, and we're expecting feedback on the record of decision by the 6th of November. On slide 23, the last kind of destination enhancement project, which was at the National Heritage Monument Park, that project was successfully completed and concluded. And then what we also did last year, which has been very useful for us also on slide 23, was to in fact do a product master plan, which has really helped us to move forward the work that we're doing now. So I think one of the challenges, and it has been a challenge, is really having a pipeline of projects in tourism that we're continuously implementing. And what that has done, together with the infrastructure master plan, which was completed by the domestic tourism team, is to actually provide us with the baseline information for that. The next slide slide, which is slide 24, talks to the Tourism Incentive Program. And I think that the Tourism Incentive Program is specifically designed to unlock the potential of SMMEs, to actually support Operation Pakisa, to encourage private sector investments, and to also deal with some of the energy challenges. That speaks directly to the targets of the 9-point plan. There were three programs that were implemented, and on this one I'm going to take some time so that I provide you with some provincial breakdowns. We had a market access program that was implemented, a tourism grading program, and an energy efficiency program. On the market access program, there were two parts to it. One is a domestic access program, and we call that the Hidden Gems program, which is implemented at Indaba. So in 2016, we basically had 70 enterprises that exhibited at Indaba on the Hidden Gems program. Those 70 enterprises had total of 928 meetings at Indaba, which resulted in business deals. In terms of the breakdown, 49% of those enterprises were women, 53% were black owned. In the Eastern Cape, we had 5 enterprises. In the Free State, there were 3. In Gauteng, there were 12. For KZN, there were 10. In Limpopo, there were 7. For Mpumalanga, there were also 7. The Northwest had 2, and the Northern Cape had 12, and the Western Cape had 14. In 2017, we expanded this program, and the 2017 numbers, we had 392 applications to exhibit at the Hidden Gems. We trained 284. But in the end, we actually only took 90 of those 284 into the Indaba platform. That was based on the businesses through the training who would have the most success. So again, if you have the breakdown, from the Eastern Cape, you had 26 who were trained and 11 who went to Indaba. From the Free State, there were 24 that were trained and 9 that went to Indaba. For Gauteng, there were 40 that were trained and 13 that went to Indaba. And then for KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, there were 27 each that were trained and 10 each that went to Indaba. The Northwest, 46 were trained and 10 went to Indaba. For the Western Cape, 38 were trained and 10 went to Indaba. And then, of course, for the Northern Cape, 29 were trained and 11 went to Indaba. For our international market access program, which is really taking businesses to international platforms, we had a total of 232 applications. 87 were approved. 131 were rejected, and these were largely because they didn't provide the compliance information that is required in order to make a decision on their application. 44% of these were SMMEs, and the breakdown is as follows in terms of the provinces. The Eastern Cape had 10, Mpumalanga and the Free State 5 each, Gauteng had 23, Northwest and KZN had 6, and then Limpopo and Mpumalanga had 3 each, and the Western Cape had 31. This program actually is fairly successful. So we've tried to follow those participants over a period of 6 months to understand whether this has translated into real business deals. Our investment or contribution to this program was in that financial year $7 million. But from the records that we have and the reports that are coming from the businesses that participated, they actually made just over 26 million rand worth of business from their investment. So at these events, we understand that the contact that they had meetings were 101,869. Those are people who they met with, who came to their stands, who had conversations with them. But post the event, they had 26,000 queries and follow-ups from their actual meetings. And if we actually look at the breakdown, it corresponds with the number of enterprises that were there from the provinces. But this is money now that flows directly into the provinces. So for the Eastern Cape, there was an amount of just over 4.5 million. That was a direct business from the International Market Access Program. For Gauteng, there was an amount of just under $3 million that flowed directly into the province as a result of business deals. For KZN, that amount was $3.2 million. For the Northwest, it was $120,000. And then for the Western Cape, which had the largest number of exhibitors, which was Study One, it was actually just under $15.5 million that came directly into the province itself. So that's the program itself is actually showing actual return on investment, if I can say that. And I think we continue to follow what happens with these businesses beyond that to understand how to expand and how to improve the program. The tourism grading program, we ran a pilot in 2015-16, and we learned a lot from that pilot. We didn't have as large an uptake as we anticipated. And so in 2016-17, we partnered with the TGCSA. Part of the way the program ran before, excuse me, was that we would give rebates to people who applied. That was because we weren't on the TGCSA system. But the streamlined process allows us to give upfront discounts to people who are applying. That means that initially when we were providing rebates, it was anywhere between 60 and 70%. Our rebates now are between 80 and 90%. The difference of 10% is really related to whether someone is a TOMSA member. They get an added benefit for collecting those revenues. So this program actually roughly doubled, but the numbers are really not as significant as the percentages. We sent a call to applications to just over 4,000 registered graded establishments. But we only got 372 applications. Of that, we approved 277. And if we look at the breakdown of that, in the Eastern Cape, 7%, Free State was 2%, Gauteng is 24%, KZN is 13%, Limpopo is 2%, Mpumalanga is 4%, the Northwest is 5%, and the Western Cape 40%, the Northern Cape at 4%. We don't actually understand from research why the uptake is so low, but we have actually got feedback from, there are roughly about 1,400 new applicants every year. And one of the things that we have, it's anecdotal, is that a lot of those new applicants have actually refused to take up the actual subsidy, if you call it that. We think it's because they don't have the necessary compliance certificates to apply for it. So that's our anecdotal evidence. We are also well aware that there are establishments who currently don't meet the criteria, and the Tourism Grading Council is basically working on a developmental program to help those establishments who currently don't meet grading criteria to get to the standard where they can officially be graded. So we've recognized that gap in the process, and we're working quite closely to ensure that we have graded establishments. Grading is significant and important because it provides quality assurance to a visitor and it provides some form of recourse. The energy efficiency program is the last program. We basically ran a pilot last year at several sand park sites and sand beach sites. So Robben Island, of course, being the one that was launched. And the DG spoke to the details of how much they are saving in terms of fuel. But I think over a year, they will save 5 million rand per annum on their fuel costs. And the system itself will pay for itself in 5 years. So it's a very significant saving that the pilot is actually making in our state-owned facilities. The other sites that are being run, there are actually four Kruger National Park sites. So Skukuza Rest Camp, Lower Sabi Rest Camp, Shokwane picnic site and Kuzlu picnic sites. And then we have botanical gardens, the Karoo Desert National Botanical Garden, the Free State National Botanical Garden, and the Huntum National Botanical Garden. We have now also launched the Green Tourism Incentive Program in partnership with the IDC. And this program then basically is targeted at private sector institutions and will actually create an incentive for them to green their facilities. and it's part grant and then part own contribution. So we've learned a lot from actually implementing the program in our public parks. If I can then move to the slide 25, which relates to the State of Tourism report, which was completed last year. I'm not going to talk much about that, but it's important because it tells us about the trends. That report is available on our website. And then we launched two mobile apps. We tested them last year. They will be launched shortly. The names of the mobile apps, the first one is for tourist guides. It is called the South African Tourist Guide Directory. It's available on Google Play and also on the Apple App Store. So far, we've had 240 downloads of our app. But on this app, we have 6,874 guides that are registered, and their details are contained there. The breakdown is in the Western Cape, 3,053, in the Northern Cape, 182, in the Northwest, 261, in Mpumalanga, 677, Limpopo is 442, in KZN, 575, in Gauteng, it's a Nelson, but I don't know what you call four ones, 1111, it looked like a Nelson to me, but that's 111. And then in the Free State, it's 85, and in the Eastern Cape, 488. The mobile apps for the VICs is called the South African Travel Directory, and we have 948 establishments that are on that. I won't provide the breakdown for the provinces, but these are actually the VICs that are registered in the province. And then the last slide, Chair, which is on slide 26, really talks to our national tourism information gateways at the Kinshasa International Airport and at the OR Tambo International Airport. Those are running well, and our teams are currently finalizing an agreement for the Cape Town International Airport with the Cape Town team. I'm going to hand over then to DDG Milan.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I will take you through Program 3, International Tourism Management, which starts on slide 27. The first couple of slides refers to work that we did around the facilitation of skills development opportunities. And on slide 28, the first one refers to work that we did in terms of developing a cross-border guiding module with the aim of improving ease of travel between two countries in the region. The module is now piloted between South Africa and Namibia, but the module was developed in the previous financial year under 10 themes as highlighted on slide 28. Slide 29 speaks to skills development opportunities that we facilitated in terms of language training, specifically on Russian and Mandarin, based on the needs that were identified. Russian focused solely on tourist guides, whereas Mandarin we focused on tourist guides as well as frontline staff. In Russia, with Russian, we trained at the end eight guides. We not only selected the participants, honourable members, in both Russian and Mandarin, the training happened as part of phase one, and as part of phase two, students had the opportunity to go to both Russia and China to also experience the culture while, you know, after completing the language training. So with Russian, two of the top achievers, two ladies, went to Russia to experience the culture and practice the language training that they undertook. And in Mandarin, because of the relationships that we built with China, with our counterpart in China, as well as with the airlines, we managed to take all 20 of the learners to China. Just to say, from the 20, 16 were youth, and we've been informed that one of them received a one-year scholarship in China, which is which is she's currently completing in China. So we not only recruit, we did not only recruit the participants, but we also trained as part of phase one and two in the previous financial year. On slide 30, Deputy Minister referred to the the international placement of 12 learner chefs at the end, also because of our relationships with our counterparts in the Seychelles, as well as with the Chefs Association. We managed to place 20 chefs there for a year. They're currently still in the Seychelles undergoing the training. On slide number 31, those are two projects that we did to enhance some of the internal projects that we have. On slide 31, number 4, is we looked at benchmarking capacity building programs for provinces and municipalities to also inform our local government training program. And the last one was to look at capacity building for effective participation in market access program, and that links to what Shamila was presenting on the hidden gems, to make sure that when they get that opportunity, they are trained. And there are 5 phases in this program, basically a basic training, a mentorship, a trade engagement with established tour operators at Indaba. That is when we take them to Indaba. They exhibit there at the Hidden Gems Pavilion. And then there's also a post-event survey just to understand their participation. So those were the skills development opportunities that we facilitated in the previous financial year. On slide 32, it speaks to programs that are implemented to enhance our tourism offerings, and that is work that we started around our investment program, and we completed in the previous financial year a draft tourism investment master plan, which is now being taken forward in the current financial year. Slide 33 speaks to the implementation of the Accreditation of Tourism Company program. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, this is the only target that the branch or the program didn't fully achieve. You might recall that the Inter-Ministerial Committee on Immigration Regulations recommended that the ATC program, in short, be rolled out to China, India, and Russia. The program was very successfully rolled out to China. The visa waiver that the Minister of Home Affairs announced for Russia made the rollout of the program in Russia not necessary. And in India, with further work that we have done, we established that, you know, a ATC program would not improve what we have on the ground, and as such it was agreed not to roll it out in India. Further work was also done on the possible extension of the program into Africa, and that will, on a continuous basis, we will look at extending the program. On slide 34, it speaks to work that we are doing to facilitate regional integration. Specifically, it speaks to the annual ministerial session that our minister hosts at the tourism in Indaba. It was hosted last year in May during the Indaba, and the number of participants are clearly spelled out in the actual performance. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. I will hand over to Program 4, which is Maron.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. I'm going to present on Program 4, which is to be domestic tourism management. We had 17 targets, 14 were achieved, 2 significant work was done, 1 was not achieved. The first target was to come up with a reviewed domestic tourism growth strategy, which we were able to review. And we use the what we call The theory of change is complete. We have taken it through to when we developed it, we engaged necessary stakeholders, and we are ready to can present to the committee. The second strategic objective was to accelerate the transformation of the tourism sector, where we are expected to come up with a social tourism initiative. We had four in order for us to promote open access to selected government-owned attractions. And we focus on the youth, people with disabilities, senior citizens, and the stock fair. This is the target that we did together with the South African Tourism. The following one is on implementing the Enterprise Development Program. We had 100 rural enterprises that we were expected to support, which we were able to do. But in addition to that, we were able to also have contact with others. And the breakdown was as follows, which we are carrying them over into the 2017 financial year. For Western Cape, we have 48. For Free State, we have 50. For Northwest, we have 18. For Eastern Cape, it's 55. For Northern Cape, it's 47. For Mpumalanga, it's 45. For Limpopo, it's 25. For KZN, it's 30. And for Gauteng, it's 30. In addition to the SMMEs countrywide, we also had two incubators, one in Murulen, the other one which we did right at the end of the financial year is in Mpumalanga. For Murulen, each incubator have 50 SMMEs. And for Murulen, the breakdown is as follows, 17 are women owned, 10 is youth, 23 is male, and their performance at 6 months. Already they had created 115 jobs, and in terms of revenue collectively, they have collected 2.2 million. We are collaborating with our sister departments, the Department of Small Business, as well as CIFA and IDC, in order to bring in financial support to the incubators. On slide 38 is the continuation of that, where we have come up with a portal. The Enterprise Development Portal is able to assist the SMMEs to get information from the portal. And this portal, in this current financial year, wants it to be joined with the BE portal, which Ms. Chetty has indicated that you have launched it during the Transformation Summit, so that they are joined. We don't have two separate portals in support of the same group of people. We also have a number of capacity building programs that we are implementing. The first one being the CHEF program. For the year, we targeted 577 trainees, and the training entails 20% theory and 80% practical work. The first year is on the National Certificate in Professional Cooker, which is an NQF-3, and the second year students are doing a diploma in either cuisine or pastry, which is NQF-5. We had graduations out of this. 518 were able to graduate. We had distinctions as well as merit. And as I remember well, I think 20 couldn't pass on the program. And some of the students, some of them have gone overseas, the U.S., Dubai, and including the Seychelles program that we are currently collaborating with the country. The second one is on the Somalia, which is a course that carries 30% theory and 70% practical. And the skilling areas are for bar attendants, wine server. They need to know about the basic wine tasting, wines of the world, food and wine pairing, as well as the different types of the vines. It was in four provinces, which is Gauteng. Gauteng had 40, Western Cape 120, KZN 120, and Northern Cape 20. It was a bit difficult to get learners from the Northern Cape, and we managed to, we still struggle even in the current 2017 to get learners from the Northern Cape, because once you have the learners, you need to have places where you can place them for them to get the 70% practical training. On the hospitality service training, we had 2,000 all in all, but we were able to go up to 2,003 in terms of enrollment. There were two provinces where, after we have done the procurement, the service provider decided to withdraw, which was Limpopo and Northwest. So we had to top up the learners. For Gauteng, we had 230. For Western Cape, it was 575. For KZN, it was 575. Mpumalanga, 350. Northern Cape, 115. Nothing for Limpopo and Northwest, but we carried them over. Free State, at this point, they carried over the group which graduated in May. On the food safety, we managed to recruit and enroll 450. The other difficulty was also in Northern Cape, where 50 learners we couldn't get, and we indicated that we'll carry them over in the 2017. The breakdown for Free State for the food safety assurance, it's 25, Gauteng was 75, Western Cape was 75, KZN was 100, Limpopo was 60, Mpumalanga was 75, Northern Cape 15, then Eastern Cape 50. The food safety assurance program, that's where we target FET graduates who are not employed, but who have done the courses within the tourism as well as environmental studies. On the local government tourism induction program, we focus on district municipalities within the poverty nodes, and the main objective for this program is to make sure that the public sector and communities within the selected municipalities are given information related to tourism. We share information with the traditional leaders within those municipalities, the councillors, and the officials within municipalities. And what we do is to invite people with expertise, expert information related to the areas that they have requested to be taken on board, what is it all about. On the CHRD strategy, last year we were expected to come up with a CHRD strategy, which we were able to do, and currently what we are going to do is to create awareness within all the provinces regarding what is entailed in the strategy, what is the implementation plan of the strategy, which we are also ready to can share with the committee. On the NTCE, it was convened, and close to 7,177 participants, including learners and educators from all provinces, except for Western Cape. Western Cape, last year, didn't participate. Even this year, they didn't participate. And basically, it's to encourage our young people to really take note of the tourism as one of those subjects that they can carry forward in terms of their career development. On the 20 black women that were trained by UNISA School of Business Leadership, 19 were able to go through the training. Unfortunately, we lost one, and they graduated in October on the 19th. Out of the 19, 16 were able to graduate, 2 couldn't meet the requirements, 1 didn't proceed. And out of the 16 that graduated, 5 already have been placed in executive positions within their company. In terms of enhancing tourism offerings here, we're expected to implement the Service Excellence Integrated Support Program, which we're able to do in 3 products, that is Manyani Game Reserve, Robben Island, Golden Gate. We changed it to Skukuza due to the request of SANParks. We're able to do the training as expected. On the signage, we were expected to do signage, interpretation signage, at 4 heritage sites. That is the Drakenstein, Victor Fester in Western Cape, Nelson Mandela Capture Site, KZN in KZN, and Freedom Park in Gauteng, as well as the Mandela Statue at Union Buildings. We're able to assist the institution for them to be able to come up with the signage, interpretation signage at this site. On the Blue Flag program, where basically we want to have accreditation of 50 beaches, which we're able to do in 3 coastal provinces, that is KZN, Eastern Cape, and Western Cape. For KZN, 60 beaches were assisted, Eastern Cape 50, and Western Cape 110. We also trained 206 young people who are beach stewards within this program. We also came up with the infrastructure master plan, which ties up with the investment strategy that came from the then policy knowledge branch, which going forward will be able to assist us in terms of infrastructure development on the nodes that have been identified. The last one, which is on full-time equivalent, that is the target that we couldn't meet. We were supposed to have done 3,488 FTEs. By the end of the year, we managed to do 1,734 full-time equivalent, and the reason being that we couldn't commence on the fourth quarter due to the in the third quarter due to the GTEC processes, basically for us to assess what is already in place. Do we need to go forward with these infrastructure projects or not, which is an exercise that has been finalized and that will assist us to go forward. And the corrective measure, as indicated, is that we had to assess so that we can be able to fully implement them if there is viability on these projects. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, Deputy Minister. I'm Lula Maduma, and I'm going to report on the achievements for Program 1. First, starting off by saying that we were able to achieve all of our targets that was set for the period under review, starting with slide number 49. The first KPI deals with the strategic documents that were to develop and implement, and those are the strategic plan and the APP for the 2017-18 period, and those were indeed reviewed. We also were able to implement on our 4 quarterly reports, as well as develop our APP. Our annual performance report for 2016-17 was also implemented. On our risk, our quarterly risk mitigation reports, we analyzed them and also submitted them to the Risk Management Committee. On the next KPI, it deals with the SAT oversight reports, which were prepared and submitted. I may just add also that in this current financial year, we're also embarking on a review or development of the oversight framework for SAT, and the focus will be on compliance and governance on the one side and also on strategy with regards to implementation and reporting thereof. And then going to the next slide, which is 50, it looks at our targets. The first one on the vacancy rate, which is set at 8%. Again, there we, out of a total establishment of 496 employees, our vacancy rate was at 6.6%. On our EE targets, with regards to our target groups, women, in senior management service, people with disabilities, and black representation, we did meet those targets also, with women at 50.7%, people with disabilities at 4.6%, and black representation at 95.2%. With regards to the development and implementation of our workplace skills plan, that was also fully achieved. We provided 7 skills programs that are listed there, provided training to 222 beneficiaries, but also implemented other training interventions with regard to our compulsory induction program for our new employees. We supported 23 interns, provided 10 external bursaries, and also and also provided 39 internal bursaries. So that was also fully achieved. And going to slide 51, dealing with the first KPI there that deals with our management of labor relations issues, there was full compliance there in the manner in which we handled our grievances, our misconduct cases, disputes, and collective bargaining. Going to the second one, the seventh one that deals with the implementation of phase 2 of our ICT strategic plan, that was fully implemented, and that basically entailed strengthening our website with regards to security and making some installation upgrades. We also started the process of developing our portals. As you've heard, the tourism knowledge portal, the ED portal, as well as the BBBEE portal, which you've already heard that we're going to be merging with the tourism enterprise development portal. And then going on to our quarterly and annual financial statements, 3 quarterly interim financial statements were compiled and submitted to National Treasury, and then 1 annual financial statement was also compiled and submitted to both National Treasury and to the Auditor General. Going on to slide number 52, with regards to the annual internal audit plan, that was also fully implemented, also achieved implementation with regards to our cabinet and cluster coordination protocols, which we reviewed, and also coming to our communication strategy that was also implemented, and that entailed hosting Izimbizo and developmental events, producing our publications internally and externally, conducting media monitoring, and also managing our monthly and quarterly call center. Going to slide number 53, it deals with the tourism complaints. We were able to refer all of our complaints that we received from tourists to our regulators. We received a total of 59 complaints. 56 of those were domestic. And then just to provide a provincial breakdown, 28 were from the Western Cape, 14 from Gauteng, 7 from KZN, 3 from Northwest, And then Limpopo, the Free State, and the Northern Cape had one complaint each, no complaints from the Northern Cape. And members, just for your interest, if one were to analyze the complaints with regards to the top three, the first one would be complaints around refunds. Second one would be around services, dissatisfaction with the services provided. And then the third one would be misleading advertisements. And then going on to the next KPI, with regards to amendments to the Tourism Act, the Tourism Amendment Bill was drafted and the amendments submitted. However, the department made a decision to hold off with regards to submitting the amendments to Parliament because we wanted to review, conduct a policy review of the impact of the sharing economy and specifically the impact of BNBs on the sector. So that work has started already with regards to consultations with stakeholders. There's further consultations to be held, particularly with departments that may be affected should there be any legislative review. We expect that if there are amendments, Parliament will see those amendments probably in the latter part of 2018-19. Going to slide number 54, number of tourism regulations developed and procedures thereof were developed, and these deal with process and time frame. And then the number 15, the KPI there, it deals with the procurement, and the department is fully compliant with regards to procuring from BBBE compliant businesses. And that, honourable members, is my last presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Members, Deputy Minister, I'm unfortunately, taking you now back in the presentation to page 6, where the budget information is. If you look on page 6, you will see that our administration, our spending was 96.1%, and policy and knowledge services, which include our transfer payment to SA Tourism and also our tourism incentive program, is 95.7%, and then international tourism management, 97.5%, and then domestic tourism, which include our expanded public works program, a spending of 94.6%. In total, the department had a spending of 95.5%. On the next slide, slide 7, just give you a breakdown. If you look at the blue part, it is the administration of our spending. It's 12% that goes to administration, 63% to policy, 22% to domestic, and then 3% to international. On slide 8 is just a breakdown on the economic classification, where you can see the current payments of our budget. It's the first part, and then the second part is the transfers and subsidies. And then the last part is the capital assets and the payment for financial assets. The variance at the end of the year was 89.87 million. On the next slide, slide 9, just gives you a breakdown of the current, which is 30% of our budget. Then our transfer payments is 61%, and then our capital is 9%. If you look at slide 10, there you can see the variances which make up the 89.87%. Just to say that on the transfer payments, the 22.9% to 22.9 million, 22.6 million is the money that we receive from the Department of Public Works, our EPWP incentive program, which we could not draw
as we needed the approval from the Department of Public Works. So that money had also been to be returned to National Treasury. The next one, the capital assets, there is an amount of 52.1 million, which was a rollover request. It was linked to our energy efficiency projects, which is currently, some of them are currently completed, like the one on Robben Island, and the other one is still running with Sand Parks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ. Did you want to say something? I know we will normally allow the political head to say something as well, just in conclusion of the presentation, to start it off and to round it off. Not that you're the political head, the deputy minister is, but I'm preparing the deputy minister. DJ, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just wanted to amplify a few points which would provide clarity. The first one will be the very last point that the CFO spoke to, which was the 52.1 million rands in rollover request. The site where the project was meant to take place. We went through all these processes around EIAs and all sorts of assessments. And there was a certain plant species that was found within that site that we were clearly informed that it's one of the protected species that we cannot touch. So we then had to start looking for a different site but within a certain radius. And the challenge was that in some of the areas where we're finding space, there would still be significant amount of shade that comes from the trees in and around that particular site. Then there was a question of whether these can actually be put on the roof, and the roofs in the bush are actually thatched, so that would not also be the case. So it took quite a bit of time between technical advisors, environmentalists, and so on to really then pin down the actual sites. In the process, then, we were saying we have this money. We alerted National Treasury, and they said, well, our advice is that rather apply for this rollover, but whether you're going to get it or not, it will depend on the fiscal circumstances at the prevailing time. We have made some sort of provision for us to still be able to conclude on those projects. So what we would then do is, instead of capitalizing further the green incentive with IDC this year, we will use some of that particular amount to be able to take care of that backlog. And that would allow us then to be able to manage our financial flows going forward in light of the fact that that rollover was actually not granted. So I thought I should just state that. But we were also being more disciplined about not using the money for the sake of using it, because we could see it coming. But the point was it was appropriated for a purpose, and that purpose had not yet reached the time. So that's what happened with that. The second issue, which I thought I should also just amplify a bit, relates to you had DDG Rampil talked about GTEC. So let me just go to what was this whole GTEC issue. Honorable members would recall that over a year ago we came here and we indicated that we had instituted forensic investigations on some of the EPWP projects, the outcome of which was quite clear that we needed to go and do a much thorough review of whether some of the projects that we're embarking upon are projects that we should proceed with or not. What really stimulated that was I visited one site And when I got to that particular site, my own thinking was perhaps this is something we should demolish and proceed. But technically, I did not have any competency to do that. So we needed people who are able to do that and come and advise us as to how it should be done. In the process of actually doing that particular review, we then used GTEC, which is an entity of National Treasury. And GTEC, as it was going through that particular process, it was not possible for us to continue construction at the same time reviewing what has actually been done on the ground. We needed to conclude one process and then bring the other process in. So in our report, we had indicated that we could already then foresee that we would actually shortfall in terms of the full-time equivalent jobs, which is what we are actually reporting today. So that process now has been concluded, and we were also mindful, Honorable Chairperson, there was a question at some point which said, but if you were to take the existing some additional projects on board, you would still be able to meet this. But where we're going to be caught up is a scenario where we take the money, we plug that money into new projects, which are not going to end immediately. Then GTEC comes back and it says, the projects that you are holding on to, you need to proceed with them. Then the going concern issue would actually creep in because we'll not have money for these projects and those projects. So we had to actually get that balance right through and through. As you would see when we come to report first quarter, we had already exceeded some of the targets for that quarter and so on. And so we are actually progressing. I also wish to state that it was a year where we were going through a restructuring of the organization. So all these DDGs have got new titles, new scope, and so on, changing of projects from one hand to another, and so on and so forth. So in that kind of environment, they were still able to do a whole lot of things that they've actually reported on. But most importantly, what is encouraging for us is that we are able to actually see the impact, small scale of course, in terms of the relationship with the budget, as the Deputy Minister said, but we are able to see that something is actually coming and we will be able to build on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just two smaller additions. I think one is on the students that we support. DDG Malan explained that we've got about 20 that are, they are in Seychelles. But I think in addition, we have 14 who are in the U.S. That are also being supported. So their support may split between the financial aid last year and this one. But I think these are some of the students that we give them the opportunity after training, then they are able then to go and work outside the country and then come back. They decide whether they extend their work there or they come back then and be absorbed internally. But also the question of the job creation in terms of the body training, the chest training for the young people. As you know, that the training is 70% practical and 30% theory. This gives them a good opportunity because out of those that we trained, 60% of them get to be absorbed by the industry, and 40% are the ones that are like unemployed. And it's those that will then assist in making sure that how then do they start their own facilities with a bit of challenges because we are looking at those programs that will be able to link to their training and be able to be at their level as young people, but also to give the support. So some we send them to the NYDA where possible, but we try also to see how can we deal with the 40%. And we believe that I think this is a good example. Some are in the cruises, those that we're supposed to give the certificate to when we head over. A lot of them, it's more than I think 6 to 80, that are already placed in some of those huge ships across the world, that they're out there working as well as making sure that they can be able to, you know, find their own niche, whether they continue in those ships or whatever, and then they come back. So this is just a little addition in terms of what, because I think this will spend the budget, I mean, to to look at those opportunities and trying to deal with our unemployment, as we know that in our country, the 27.7 by states SA, which is the official one, the higher percentage goes to the young people. So these are the programs of the young people that then we try and make sure that we can be able to assist them, taking into account that the training must translate into some employment, but also looking at the entrepreneurial side, because we say there must not only be, we do really, I think, appreciate the industry for absorbing them, but we also say that the 40% that we need to look at opportunities of entrepreneurship for them, so that they are able maybe to start their own facilities. So that was the little addition, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. DG, the DDGs, you did very well in the presentation. I allowed it, members. I hope you'll bear with me because of two reasons. The one is that we don't always get the opportunity, and the second is that it is a department that's performing relatively well, so we wouldn't have too many questions to raise with them. Allow me to welcome the Honorable Bauda, who is from Mpumalanga, and then also the only crown in our jewel, or the only jewel in our crown. We are struggling with our gender representation. I heard you bragging about it earlier. We commend you for that. The Honorable Dikgale is from Limpopo. We also just want to make use of the opportunity to welcome the Honorable Mhlanga, who is a new member of this committee. He's an old member of Parliament. We had the Honorable Mtimunye from Mpumalanga, and he was given a different responsibility in another committee, and accordingly the province deployed Honorable Mhlanga to this committee. That means, honorable members, we are temporarily without a whip, but that should be sorted out within the next week. By next week, I spoke to the leadership and said that we need something in writing. They are saying that, look, normally the one colleague replaces the other colleague, and I said no. Whips are appointed not by us as a committee, but by the chief whip, and the chief whip needs to communicate that properly with us. Honourable members, let's give you an opportunity now to engage with the presentation. Honourable Makwebu, just to remind you, from Eastern Cape, Honourable Faber from Northern Cape, and then Honourable Khai with an R from the Eastern Cape. Honourable Dikgale, did I see your hand as well? Okay. Oh, and then there's Honourable Bauda. Let's have the four members. Honourable Makwebu.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Deputy Minister and DG and the tourism team, you know, in the previous appearance before us, I think Tourism South Africa raised the same, you know, challenge that you have raised as well, that is the domestic tourism has declined. So I want us to pause quickly and talk about that. Because we know there are variables and there are many reasons, but we have to keep living and keep going. There's a recession, there's been an economic meltdown and all that. But in South Africa, given our challenges and unemployment, your department, you know, is really helping here. But I note that, and tell me if I'm wrong, I note that you're doing what you're doing and you're doing good, but I see potential if perhaps you can be challenged in your way of doing things. You're investing in a lot of, you know, iconic sites, your botanical gardens. They attract particular people, you know. Don't take me to a botanical garden. I feel like I'm in a graveyard. That's just me. But, you know, when I talk about, I'm a township fellow, and there's a lot of activities in the townships. You know, there's a Chisanyama, there's a this and that, there's activities, there's arts, then there's cultural events, there's music, there's what. But all I'm saying is that the notion, in fact, not the notion, but the issue of domestic marketing or destination marketing companies. I think Tourism South Africa has indicated to us last time they appeared that they were really looking at that and exploring that. And you being the department itself, I see you as a mother to the daughter, so to me, you one thing, you then crack it. The domestic marketing, destination marketing companies. Because if we invest in that and train our people, you know, because they know that where they live and they know the activities there, so that if someone wants to go to Durban tomorrow and there's a lot of destination marketing companies you can look at, so they'll sell you a package. You come to Durban, we sell, you know, then we would give you the following. If you drive, you come, then we put you in the B&B. Tomorrow we take you to this cultural event. In the evening we do this. Tomorrow we do that, we do that. And that it benefits a lot of other, you know, SMMEs. Your B&B guy, your shuttle guy, and your guy who's doing all the other, you know, activities. It would be music or anything else. But be that as it may, Minister, I want, you know, tourism to really, you know, expedite that, you know, because I see potential that our people must be trained. They are the ones who knows their communities. And then once they understand this concept of destination marketing, and then they'll be able to be empowered to package it beautifully and then benefit many others, because it's also got a factor of responsible tourism, where people spend their money, responsibly and benefiting the society and uplifting the others in that value chain. That's just my input. I want to hear the department respond to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and also to everyone presenting here today. As our chairperson say, yes, I think this is maybe one of the departments where we as the opposition party, as we're sitting in provinces, but as opposition, don't really come down on you, because I really do think you're doing a good job. There's no nuclear deals, no train deals, nothing. We're happy with you, to be quite honest. Chairperson, please, can I be protected? Last time I saw you actually present, you asked me to speak, not the Honourable Member. Chairperson, yes, just quickly, let's, on the presentation, I'm quite excited to see that you guys have created an application. Now, as I'm also an ICT for Parliament, and I'm a gadget boy, I can't stay away from these things. When I look at this app immediately, I went to my iPhone and I looked at it, and there was an Africa one, and then I was just quickly, I want to get here quickly because it's going to irritate me if I don't get it. Okay, South Africa Tourist Guide, and I see it's 49 Rand. Now, I want to know the app that you are presenting, are you giving it for free for tourist guides as such? And I would like to have that app. I can also say to you, myself and our Shadow Minister, James Force, we've done the course to be tourist guides. And then while I was doing this, I also met with a lot of tourist guides that was in the process of learning and doing the Western Cape Tourism Guide. And the one owner of Livingston Tourism Academy asked me about one of the problems that he had, and I really want to bring that over to you, because I saw that on page 29 of the presentation. Let me get there quickly. And specifically on the Mandarin, as you know, when we get tourists from overseas, a lot of these tourists can't speak English and they're from other countries. So we do have Chinese people, for instance, doing the tourism courses to become tourist guides, but the problem that they've got, and I'm not just speaking about one specific group of people, but there are lots of others as well in other languages, German, my wife, Polish, etc., etc. But the problem comes in for these tourist guides. As soon as they write the examination and they get their certificate to become tourist guides, the problem is the work visa to become a tourist guide. They can't get their, bulky or whatever. And I know Jacques, the owner of Livingston, were pleading with me by saying that he's got so many Chinese people that's done these courses and they actually passed it, but they can't become tourist guides. They're regulated by the Department of Home Affairs. So if you can perhaps see if we can do something about that or give us feedback on that as well. Then, as I am a boy from the Northern Cape, I saw on page 39 and 40 with great concern that it's been difficult to get host employers for learners in the Northern Cape, 300 youth enrolled in summer training courses, and then again 500 learners enrolled on food safety program. It's been difficult to host employers of 50 learners in the Northern Cape. And I need to understand, is this problem with our department in the Northern Cape? That because surely, as the Northern Cape, I think at this moment, if I'm speaking under correction, that we're the third largest tourism attraction province in the country. Now, if that is so, how is it possible that we can't host 50 learners in the Northern Cape? I mean, we've got that whole Upington area. We've got so many guest houses. We really do have hell of a lot of tourist attractions in the Northern Cape. So this worries me. If you can perhaps tell me where the problem lies, I can go back to the legislator and to the department in Northern Cape from my side and see if I can't perhaps help on that. Yes. And then the last one, crime. We all read newspapers, and the one thing that I think we all would like to see is that township tourism actually starts to explode in this area. We need township tourism to take off. There's a huge market in township tourism. The question that I do have is, how do you look at the challenge of crime in these areas? We just read 2 weeks ago of these people from Singapore that was going to do a township tour and they were robbed. They were left alone next to the street and they flew back home. He was very upset. He put a piece in the newspaper. How do we actually overcome this challenge? Because crime is a challenge. Deputy Minister, are there talks between yourself as the political heads and the Minister of Police how we can somehow get tourists more safe in these areas? I'm not saying we have to have policemen with firearms taking tourists through the areas, but is there some way that we can somehow win this situation and win the hearts of tourists to actually come and visit our townships? Because I think we need this. This is a winner, this program, if we can make it work. But we must also understand that tourists are scared of their safety in these areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable DM, DG, and the team. Actually, most of the markings are taking place in towns of the tourists. Between our Tambo Airport on their way to the hotel. So markings are taking place there, so not necessarily in township. So there may be isolated incidents. So it's not a major problem in the township. So I just wanted to correct that. Maybe we should visit the township, Mr. Harbour.
I've actually been there. You can join me.
Yeah, sure. I'll invite you to Mtanzania. This weekend.
I've got time, yes.
Okay, sure. Chair, but I also want to start on this issue of township economy. I raised this, when the Minister of Tourism appeared before the NCOP, just to check with regard to the officials in particular from all the departments that travel between Pretoria and Cape Town, if she were to quantify how much annually are we spending as government just between Pretoria and Cape Town. You know, she indicated that it's about 10 billion. That's what she said.
All departments.
all departments, not just one department. Imagine if you were to also include provinces, when provinces travel between local municipalities, how much that would be if some of the amount were to be invested in township economy, where officials and ourselves are compelled to use, I even made an example of even Parliament itself when Honorable DM, you saw us in Free State. We were at the Southern Sun Hotel, I think, or Garden Court, when you were going to for the Tourism Month. We were there as part of our outreach program as a committee. Why didn't we arrange that we should go to stay in the township? And you know, so my question is whether there is a program. Perhaps did it see a part of a domestic program, tourism? Whether we should not that be promoting that, maybe focusing on government first and parliament. And we can spread it to perhaps international tourists to encourage them. The point that Honorable Masbuebo was, it's a good point because it's also going to benefit, you know, those who have, what do you call it? There's motor to the one. Oh, yes. No, I've just taken something from. So, but there's a point that was also raised with regard to the transformation. The DM mentioned that there's no improvement. I was wondering what is it that the BBBEE Charter Council is doing with regard to that. If perhaps you can share with us the work that it is doing to promote transformation in the tourism sector. But also with the decline with regard to domestic tourism. You know, I used to watch this advert on Short Left, which I don't see anymore. I don't know to what extent it was also contributing to promote domestic tourism, whether you decided to abandon it because there were no results. I don't know. The other issue that also confuses me is when we visit some of the parks, you find that these will be under the Department of Environmental Affairs, whether you're talking SANB, also these that are quoted here, the Simangaliso Wetland. When I was in that committee, we used to deal with those, Kruger National Park. If I can be clarified in terms of accountability. Just with regard to also the two reports, the domestic and the one that deals with policies, if we could, even after the meeting, even if the information can be sent to the committee secretary, the provincial breakdown. You tried to give us the figures, but you were very fast for us with regard to market access, tourism grading, energy efficiency. If we could get also with the domestic tourism DDG, if we could get those stats as well. Yeah, thank you very much, sir.
I'll give you a video on long run credit chart that you will not break your foot there.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, Chairperson. I will echo the sentiments of some of the members have expressed already about the efficiency, but I will qualify that because I'm in a little bit of a dilemma, Chairperson. This department is not very exciting. They're efficient, and it doesn't give us an opportunity then to wield the whip, so to speak. And and I will be targeting this position in 2019 for cabinet. Okay, let's not go there. I trust you guys will still be around. Chairperson, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, about the unqualified audit, which I must say it's very welcome, especially when we consider the rest of the departments or most of the other departments and everywhere else. But DG, also do whatever you can in your department to ensure that this filters down to the provinces as well, because I think that is where the significant amount of the administration, so to speak, lies. And if they are going to come back with qualified audits and so on, it's not really helping the cause as a whole. We need to improve significantly on this front across the board. The other issue is about, I want to echo, I think it's Honorable Hai said a moment ago, about separating the different provinces, because, you know, we're not the National Assembly. We are the NCOP. We represent provinces here, and we would like to see more about what is happening in the various provinces. It's not tabulated. I'd like to see better tabulated, or better is not the right word, but improved tabulation in this regard. The other issue is we've mentioned here, and this is specifically, okay, let me first talk about, give me an idea of how you define the different tourists. We have the international tourists, we have the domestic tourists, and the business tourists, and how is your department specifically targeting these different sections in the tourism market? The last issue that I, again, I'm echoing the sentiment of some members here, but this is directly to the deputy minister. If we are concerned about crime in the country, then the way to reduce the crime rate, South Africa's crime rate is increasing. It is the highest in the world or amongst the highest in the world, but also our socioeconomic discrepancy, Honorable Deputy Minister, is amongst the highest in the world. When we reduce that, we will see a reduction in crime as well. The stakes are high, and this is what leads to high crime incidents in the country. This is directly at the... Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, let's welcome the spot-on presentation that has been presented to us. And, of course, Chair, perhaps I would like to ask two seeking clarity questions, Chair. One, Chair, will be on your slide 50, wherein you spoke of gender parity. So you said you have 50.7% of whatever representation of women, and you have 4.6 representation of disabled. Now, seeing that you are reporting on this, I therefore saw a Windows Chair to ask to the minister, because this is a political question, that since 2011, the president has sent an act of military veterans, wherein all departments must be reporting in terms of empowerment of military veterans. I just want to know from the minister, seeing that here you have 61%, if I'm calculating, what is the other 39% doing? Are you not looking to also incorporate or cover for this military veteran? Because, of course, in terms of the three pool challenges that we have as this government, most of them are unemployed currently. And the Act demands all departments to therefore allocate and then budget for the empowerment of military veterans in all 511 fields of beneficiation. Then the other one, Chair, is the issue on the issue of your domestic tourism. There is this understanding, Chair, that in all the provinces we have a revolutionary route wherein we have significant historically monuments or
Now, I just want to check with the department, because in their presentation here, there's nothing said around the issue of these revolutionary rules that have been created in the province and by the very same department in the provinces. Just want to check what do we have in that regard at this level. Yeah, Chair, let me leave it there. Thank you. Sorry, another thing perhaps to say to the minister, to look at opportunities on the issues of tourism guides. You have this trained personnel of this military veteran all across board from all the forces of military veterans that are in South Africa is recognized by the Act. They are not employed. They can also be used in terms of the tourism guide. Look at those opportunities. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson, for allowing me to say something at the end. Deputy Minister, thank you very much for always coming to this committee. We normally don't have a problem when your department comes for the presentation because you're always with them. Thank you very much. That is why Honorable Faba wanted to talk as an opposition, but he knows we don't have opposition in this committee, but members of the select committee. Thank you very much. I want to say something, Chairperson. We visited Imo State in Nigeria. Well, normally when you visit, you don't have to copy everything. Some of the things I won't even mention because I was angry when I look at them. But there's something that touched me. Always when we have a gathering, they will sing their national anthem, and thereafter they have in our case, it will be a provincial anthem. And they will have that anthem singed, and in the song, they stop corruption must stop, and they also sing about 100% of security, and that is working because we were able to travel wherever we wanted to travel, and we're not even afraid because the security is tight, and even the members of the state are contributing to at least take care of security. Well, I'm not saying they are better than us, because we were with the members of the DA from the legislature. What they said South Africa is really hard at work compared to what we were seeing there. Sesimurunga, domestic programs. During our provincial week, we visited Makuya Nature Reserve. Next, is it Makuya? No, it's Makuya. Yes, Nature Reserve next to Zimbabwe border. Those people are trying their level best, but they don't have an assistant. Maybe you should check whatever and put them in your program and see how you can assist them. I know this one of electricity is not your competency, Deputy Minister, but if you can try and check with ESCOM as to how they can end up assisting those people, because the transformer that they are putting in those nature reserves, they don't allow them to use the prepaid. And at the end of the day, their visitors end up running away because there's just darkness because of that. Maybe you can do something and try and help them. And also with the issue of fencing, their elephants are just roaming around. Sometimes they'll migrate to another nature reserve. Sometimes they'll go to their own reserve because there's no fence that is demarcating them not to go to another area. And the traditional leader there, I really applauded him because he gave them land. Whatever piece of land they wanted, he allowed them to have it. And it is really good. If they can be taken care of, then I believe when it comes to the issue of creating an employment, then it will end up assisting them. Well, I also want to congratulate Sesimurunga by try and create jobs in different provinces. I know we don't have the sea, but something can be created. so that those people can be able to at least end up having job. So that next time when you come with your presentation, at least the numbers doesn't differ like they're differing now. Thank you very much.
No, sir, with your permission, let me limit myself to a comment so that I don't consume much of your time. DM. If somebody does this, for our in future you'll become. So it's blessings. DM, I consider political leadership to be a propeller. So I'm not directing this to the administration. I'm directing this to you. I'm longing for a day where tourism in South Africa will be indigenized. I'm from Taung. You have the Taung skull, you have every little thing. But people who are residing in the same localities cannot enjoy benefits that are seen by people who are coming from Singapore, from Denmark, from wherever in the globe. And we, I think through you, whether through promulgation of a piece of legislation or whatever, please let's give effect to such flavor. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. I think I'll try and answer a few that are directly to me and then leave the others for the officials because I have, as I indicated, I'm not 100% well. I have to go to the doctor, but I said I had to come to the Select Committee and not give the excuse. So, firstly, I think I do like the spirit that I hear coming from the members in terms of how do we deal with the challenges that are existing and how do we make sure that we work together with yourself? Honorable Magwebu, Topela, I'm not causing anything, you pronounce it, because I like me. I think, amen, okay, all right. I think you raised a quite important issues, but to me it is a follow-up from what you raised the other time before. You seem to be passionate about seeing rural and township economy moving because you were saying that why can't we have the Vilakazi streets, if I remember well. The last time you were saying that why can't we have those in East London, in other places where we can be able to see much more happening because we do have these routes that you can be able to create, but also try to make sure that we can empower these communities. I fully agree with you. And the only problem is that we do have, we were just finalizing the sector strategy, but also making sure that we can be able to see what are issues that we can be able to implement as a department that will change the lives of the people in the rural areas as well as the townships. But also to give, there are some tourists who would like to go to those places. In fact, they are not, they don't want to come to Cape Town City, but they would like to go to Khayelitsha, Guguletu, to go and see what is happening there and how do people live. Some of them actually want to stay there because they want to experience typical township life. And there's some who like to go to a deep, deep rural areas, it may be Taung, that people want to go there, but not in, they like to go and stay at a typical rural area, be able to eat the food there, be able, to really, if they in the Limpopo area, experience Amasonja, the Mobani worms, because they don't want to eat the normal food that they eat where they come from. So that's why they want to go to these areas and really experience and be able to make sure that they can see something different. We are trying with the programs we have. Of course, the budget is always a problem, but I'm sure the officials will be able to answer. But it is what we are pestering them on. I think from the minister's side and myself, we are always saying, can't we try and look at these areas to see what is it that we can be able to do as a department? They've tried on some of them, but some are not working okay. But we are seeing that's why we even implemented the incubators in the areas where we think that they are able, that the small business people can be assisted there to make sure that they can be able to prosper as well. They can be able, because some turn their own houses into B&Bs. And they are doing okay, but some are not doing okay. They still want to get assistance, but we realize that there is a need that we try and make sure that we can come with new products that can be able to look at this, and hence also the Transformation Fund One, that are working with the NEF to make sure that we can assist people, partly give them a grant and also give them a loan so that they can be able to, where they are staying, improve those areas and make sure that they can be able to have good B&Bs that we can go to. I want to agree more with the Honorable Khai, but I do take your proposal very serious that we must continuously as a department look at those areas and make sure that we can be able to maybe show in terms of the current budget and next year how can we accommodate that so that you can see a difference. Honorable Khai is quite correct. He also raised the same issue last time, that we should be exemplary as maybe departments and all that to use those B&Bs and guest houses and all that. I think we try to do that, but at times you find that the guest house, you know, is fully booked. That's why you saw me at the Southern Sun. Normally I sleep at the B&Bs because I believe in them, and we also try to assist. We must be exemplary as government. We cannot just sleep in other hotels and not support those. So that time it was fully booked. I think we tried about 4 or 5. But also there are hidden gems. That also amongst the hidden gems, we've got those that have got B&Bs and facilities. Some of their facilities are really good facilities that we support and slept at. Like I was in Bloemfontein for the NTCE. I never went to the same place, the Southern Sun. I slept at the, is it Ashwood? Ashwood, yes. It's owned by a young lady. I saw her at the Indaba, and then I saw the facility and all those things, and then I went there to support, because there was space then. At the time that I was there, it was fully booked. It's just, I think, about 6 or 8 rooms. It's very small, but then he's looking at expansion. But, I mean, these are some of the B&Bs that we like to support, and I'll be glad if members of the Select Committee and also portfolio committees in the NA can try to make use of such facilities. It's a 5-star facility in Bloemfontein. Well, better off than the Southern Sun, because it's fairly a new, a place, and it is working okay. It just needs the support, I'm sure, for expansion, so that you can be able to support them. But we can do that. I'm just talking to say support township, support rural, but we do the other way. We go and sleep at the other hotels. To me, it doesn't work like that. You must be seen to be exemplary and support these people. So if that can be done, it will assist, I think, us as the department to say these facilities are used even by members of parliament, and we can be able to make sure that we deal with these issues. The question Honorable Faber asked about the, in terms of the ministers, are we talking, or the safety cluster, are we talking about the crime issues and all that? The last time I think the answer we gave, it was the minister or myself, I'm not sure. There's an interministerial committee that is sitting with the ministers who are dealing with a lot of these issues, like your Home Affairs Minister with regards to visas and other issues that are then hint unto the tourists then not to have a fairly, good trip and all that, or their comeback and all that. The security one, the police, I think after the incident of those people who were taken, our minister had to come down from, she was in Mpumalanga. She has to drive down to come and be with the Minister of Police, because she felt that Minister of Police can't just be there alone. we need to deal with these things as a collective, and she has to drive all the way, come and be part of those proceedings at the time, talking to those people and making sure that they do a joint press statement and all that. But they are continuing with the IMC in terms of the economic sector and the security sector cluster of government to make sure that they can look at these issues working together rather than just isolated or maybe just looking at their mandate and all that. Well, some of these issues are not under us as tourism, but they are interlinked in what we do. NME, I think, sits in the task team or the committee that deals with the question of your visas and all that and the migration. So we are taking this at the higher level on DDG to be part of those task team, not just to take a very junior staff, because we believe these are things that we have to tackle and make sure that the minister and myself get to be updated from time to time. And I think it was also asked by two members, I think also... Is it Ms. The Honorable Vauda also talked to the issues of what is it that we do in terms of making sure that you can be able to see much a lower crime rate in South Africa and the socioeconomic discrepancies that I mean we have. I think to me it's quite a lot of answers that I can give, but short of time I'll say, we try, I think we are one of those few countries in the world that provides your social grants and others, making sure that you mitigate against people who are poor and those who cannot afford. We try to make sure that we give some people something to have. But yes, we still have pockets of poverty in South Africa. You know that, but we've tried with this because I think if you know our budget, I'm not sure whether I'll quote the right figure, but it's plus... It is within the range, plus and minus 11. It's more than a million, I think. It's a billion. It should be 11 million people that we support under the grant. I think it's 11 million people. We started with about, I think, 3, 4 million as a country, but the number is growing. So with that, assisting the people that can't do anything for themselves and children and all those, it's quite a lot of money that government spend in terms of making sure that you deal with your socio-economic issues and try and have something that the poor cannot have. And in that regard, did you say that the 7 million, 17 million beneficiaries, is more than 11. 11 was the figure years back. Currently, as we speak, 17 million beneficiaries of the grant system. Surely we are aspiring to be a development state. There should be something that we do as an exit to try and make sure that we can have a system that will look at these issues. As much as we are sympathetic to those people who sleep without food and all that, then we try to make sure that you can give them a grant. But I think the good way is how to teach a person to fish down to give a person a fish every day. So that person can be able to be sustainable to make sure that he can move. But coming from the era where we come from, of apartheid and inequalities, that's why then the grant system was still continued, I think, to go on in terms of the social development to say, let's try and see what is it that it do so that our people can always get something. It is assisting a lot of people. 70 million, I mean, it's a lot of people that at least get something every month so that they can be able to live on. But we must try to balance that up with what then we can do in terms of our side, looking at programs and projects that are going to assist in terms of making sure the sustainability of the people. It is possible. Some people look at the value chain in terms of the tourism sector, what we provide, what we do. And also I think it goes even to the military veterans as well. Yes, every department needs to do something about this, but in terms of the tourist guide, I think the training is quite fairly accommodative to say it can take a lot of people that I want to be there, but I don't have the figures right in terms of the department, what are the numbers that we have. As you know that I'm only here from, I think, March, less than a year. We are about 7 months in office. So I wouldn't like, let me leave it to the DG to try and answer that particular, because it is there, it has been legislated. It's not only the human settlement in terms of the housing, but it should be all the departments that are trying to make sure they can be able to assist some of these military veterans in terms of making sure that they absorb them in terms of the problems. But let me give it to the DG to answer that particular question to be accurate. I don't like to say, I think, I what, because at the end you must be accountable for what you said. So I like to speak on correct things that I know, and so that I'm not in trouble tomorrow. So they'll be able to answer that and be able to come back to you with the figures that are appropriate. And I think I've tried to cover a lot. Then I had Honorable Ntebe as well in terms of looking at these issues, as well as Honorable Dikgale. What we can do, I think, to change around our situation in terms of crime prevention and others. It's a good example that you've given us in terms of what they do in Nigeria and all that. But I think, to me, there's a lot that we can learn and be able to change our people in terms of what we can do. But I think I've tried some measures. We've just launched the tourism monitors. It was the 17th of October, if I'm not mistaken, in Soweto, in a precinct of the Vilagazi. With the 200 monitors, we are trying to address some of the issues raised here in terms of safety of tourists, you know, particulars, etc., and all those things. They'll work together with some of the what do you call those people from the police, CPF, and all that, in terms of them being, you know, making sure that they can try and make sure that we have less crime scenes in terms of these areas, and try to make sure that how do we link up then with the key critical stakeholders in terms of this sector. The monitors are going to, it's a pilot, I think, that is going to be in all the provinces, but it started with the Gauteng together with them. It will go to other provinces as a means of trying to look at this issue and making sure that how then we deal with the issues. But overall, crime is there everywhere in the world, as far as where I've traveled and all that. It depends on how you manage it, how you report it. The only problem we have in South Africa is that, I mean, you see it on the front pages, as if, I mean, that's only the wrong things that are happening. You never see that we have taken 14 kids, they are in the USA, they are studying. You can't see that on first page, or 20, they are in Seychelles. You can't see that on the first page of a newspaper. It gives this picture that, I mean, we are very, 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 very crime, we are more than other countries. But these things do happen. 3 years back, three councillors from Ekurhuleni, where I come from, were mugged in London. Their bags were taken during the day when they went there in terms of the SALGA program. But you've never seen it in any London or Britain newspaper. You cannot see it. They try and see how to manage this, but to me it was a concern. Councillors, I'm one of the representatives, that if three of them can be mugged and their bags taken right in London, busy street, what does that mean? But you never ever, as I say, see it. I mean, as front page. It was maybe little in the newspaper, not at all, that we're doing. So part of our gains in on the transparency and all that, I think to me they create a problem then for us. But we still remain a country that people want to come and visit. But it's not good, I mean, to be in a situation of those tourists, I mean, from Netherlands. You think you're going to a place where you're going to enjoy and you have been robbed. And these people do it because they work in the airport with the people that they're working with, and that's what the Minister of Police is trying to get to and be able to deal with these issues, because it's not good, I mean, for people, I mean, to be afraid to come to South Africa because they'll be mugged and be taken somewhere. Some are followed through their homes from the airport. They're given information. They follow them. When they stop, they then come and then deal with this. So I believe that collectively, if we can work together on these issues, we can be able to get rid of them, but government alone cannot solve the issues. We need the partnership of the communities around and make sure that we deal with these issues. But all in all, as we are still a destination of choice, people like to, our infrastructure is also one of the best, and other issues that we offer, we'll continuously try to make sure that we can be able to see South Africa implementing the 5 in 5 strategy. 4 million international tourists more in 5 years, and 1 million domestic. To me, we can even do 2 million domestically. Short left campaign, DG will explain it. but I think it had a bit of problems in terms of how we dealt with the short left campaign. But to me, it was a good campaign that used to, if you see the adverts, they were, you know, telling you that there are packages that people can enjoy, whatever, and all, and that's why they sent part the Mahala Week that came during September was encouraging people going to this park free of charge then. So afterwards, they can be able to go there either picnicking or taking people and all that. Because currently, the figures in the States, our people don't go to those sand parks. They don't use them. And it is a problem. That's why the Environment Department then felt that you should be able to. But you work together with them. And there's a question, why are they under environment and not under us as tourism? It's one of those issues that you find that they are in between in terms of who to report to, but currently they report to environment and not to us. Remember, at one stage, this was the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. When the split, I'm sure, came, or the establishment of standalone now, tourism and the environment, I think it's where the question of entities was then, we were supposed to be dealt with and see which one fits. But surely, if you talk sand parks, if you talk your parks, people who go there are tourists. So there's a way of we must deal with these issues, look at them adequately to say, is it better if it falls under tourism or it falls under the environmental affairs? Currently work to them jointly. That's why I went to launch their Mahala Week that week, where because the minister and deputy were not there, and I ended up being called deputy minister of environmental affairs and tourism. I didn't have a problem because there's still one government and they saw me dealing with the environment issues. But what they feel to understand is that those issues, environment and sand parks, we work together with them in terms of tourist attraction. They make sure that they can let people there. We also make sure that we encourage people to go to those parks. So we must work together then as government departments to see progress. I think if I can leave you then with that, and then the officials will answer the rest. But thank you very much. I hope to visit you again or be part of the committee again next time. As I said when I started, the spirit in the committee is quite good to me. It is encouraging. It is giving us more hope as a department that we'll be able to deliver much more and make sure that we can make a difference and improve. And I'm impressed. I had, Honorable Faber and Foss who have done the tourist guy. I said, wow. So they are good ambassadors of tourism. They even study tourist guides. Yo, DG, must consider to go and study that. So that you are also part of them. But I think it's a good way of making sure that you know exactly how those people are trained and how then you can add your good views. But thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. DG, you have 3 minutes, which is not going to be sufficient. But, honourable members, I think that we will apply the normal rule that we do, which is that the questions that are not answered here, we will receive a written response on them within 7 days. You have jotted down the questions. I think, Deputy Minister, go ye well. The Deputy Minister has done well in terms of covering most of the questions, so there aren't many left. DG, can I ask you to take one out of them and to answer the one and leave it at that by quarter past? Because my clock is saying 12 minutes past.
That's why you always like
good reason. I'm still using a Timex. It's my age. DG, please.
Honorable Chairperson, we will try. The challenge is that the record may have things that are not necessarily responded to on record or clarified on record, and those things may become the record. So Parliamentary Monitoring Group, out of here, they're going to write a report. And what they're going to say is that the conclusions from the chair's side was that the department will come back with some of these responses. But the record of what the members would have raised is whether we are doing or we're not doing would remain. So it is important to just highlight some some of this. If we can get maybe 5 minutes or so, we will then be able to go through these things.
There's just been a coup.
Honorable Chairperson, we take. I will start with the questions that were raised by Honorable Mhlanga. We take note of that. We haven't had a program dedicated directly as yet. They are working on a program that will be dealing with the Liberation Heritage Route, which we are already doing some work there, but the guiding aspect would actually take into account people that have got the actual experience. We have done a little bit of piloting of that, a little bit, not much, with the Robben Island ex-political prisoners. So part of the people that we're talking about that have gone through the Mandarin training and so on, they are people that are actually on site within that particular space. So there is some work that we're doing. We are mindful of that particular aspect and the obligations around it. Quick questions about the state expenditure on travel services. The 10 billion estimated by National Treasury is the overall so far. So it would be the costs, it would be the legislatures, provinces, municipalities and so on, as well as national government. And of course, this grows year after year as the actual need in terms of what we are supposed to service would also be growing. Our domestic tourism strategy has got a couple of pillars, but to highlight the most significance, it goes into the awareness space. It goes into accessibility of these various facilities, and it then also goes into the convention space. We need to do a little bit more work in terms of the convention space. Now, we'll give you an example of things that we are actually working on. We are saying if you go to the villages, they have need to travel, and they actually travel. But you want, out of that whole process, to be able to also strengthen and develop operators within that particular space. The same applies to the township people that want to travel to other places. Now, how do you get these people to work in that particular space in that regard? We are saying if you put an incentive that actually looks at giving support with regards to access to attractions, that would actually be able to allow a lot more business people coming out of that particular space. We assist them with tour operating licenses. Then they come on board. They're able to organize these trips. But when they come here, they want to go to the Table Mountain or they want to go to Robben Island, we'll be able to soften that a little bit for the people that are coming into that particular space. Then you're dealing with the business side in terms of getting new operators into the place, but you're also dealing with the other side, which relates to the accessibility into those particular attractions. So we are working on that with the travel and tourism and the other attractions. The question about the national parks and other related attractions that may be in other places, I mean, our broader strategy recognizes our attractiveness is in nature, is in heritage, is in culture. Now, when you look at those, they are not necessarily within our space, but these are things that, as government collective, we have got to make sure that they are strengthened, all of us. But environmental affairs would, as it should, remain with a clear mandate of making sure that those animals in those parks are there, live, healthy, protected, and so on and so forth. Those plants are actually still there to sustain that particular environment and so on. But we would continue to make sure that we are marketing the area, we are bringing in the tourists into that particular area, and that growth is actually... But we work very, very closely. Art and culture work together. We're talking about these things we did in Robben Island. It's not our entity. It's art and culture. But the collaborative approach that we took there, ourselves, art and culture, DPW, Environmental Affairs, is what led to that particular initiative being successful. So the cooperative aspect will actually continue to strengthen that. We are seeing a lot more black Africans actually going into these national parks. We are seeing a lot more black Africans actually going into the gardens. They are having weddings, they are having festivals, and the growth in terms of numbers, in fact, as we speak, Sand Parks Botanical Gardens as well. Sand Parks, as we speak, Honorable Chairperson, there is now a review of the strategy to ensure that they are able to accommodate as many black Africans because the demand has actually grown. What used to happen there, we were told even yesterday at the Transformation Summit, is that when a person is checking out, they are already booking their next holiday. And it means the people that have always been going to these places, these are worms and dunnies, and so they have always been there all this time. So to be able to get into this place, people that have got a 3-month booking period beforehand, and so you have got to change the way you're actually doing it, and so on. There are... I will not go into the questions in relation to crime. I think the Deputy Minister has actually dealt with that. Suffice to say that our campaign, We Do Tourism, is also at large saying we all have a responsibility. So if I see it and I keep quiet because I was not at work, everybody has got a responsibility. So if we were to ask one another to say, when last did any one of us engage with a member of CPF within the area that I live, and just get a sense of what is going on in that particular area, we find that we don't actually involve ourselves in these things. It's only when something else has happened that we would also come in. But the globe in totality is faced with these challenges. We woke up this morning with the people that died in New York after a driver is actually driven into them along the street. We saw the other time in Texas the person who shot people that were in that particular event, where tens of people actually died. That particular individual happened to have about 23 guns in the hotel room. So you look at all these things, you realize that, well, these things are actually there, and they're happening across the globe. The issues about the business tourism, domestic tourism, and I think it was Honorable Valdo, and international tourism. International tourists, if they come here overnight, sleep over and so on, that's something we're going to count. They are not coming here to work, but they are. And then business tourists are people that would be coming here to attend conferences, basically. And then you would have people that would come here, the domestic tourists. If you go out of your usual environment, beyond 40 kilometers and so on and so forth, those people that would also be going purely specifically for leisure, even if it is not too long a distance. Some are overnight, some are not necessarily overnight. Those are the kinds of people. We've got different strategies for this. The business events strategy, that's the most critical one. We were able to even get resources from National Treasury to be able to ensure that this particular area is strengthened. We get lots and lots of these events. I will give you one example. In 2020, ophthalmologists across the globe will be descending to South Africa. You're talking about 19,000 people or so. And these are very high specialists who, in the end, really have got such big spending power. So this is, it brings a lot of revenue, and we are actually supporting in terms of bidding. We are expanding that to say, don't just bid for those events that are internationally recognized. Whatever event brings a number of people here, bring it here. So that's the kind of approach that we've taken with that. International, the new areas that we're looking at is the African diaspora. We're looking at the continent to strengthen our marketing efforts there, and we're also looking at the Middle East. We're saying there's a lot of opportunity there. And we are a lot more friendlier to the Middle East than most other parts of the world where most of the people in the Middle East used to actually go. And we're saying that is an area that we would actually be able to strengthen further. Honorable Chairperson, we can go on, but I do suppose we have taken note of the questions that Honorable Dhale raised. We will look at the challenges that are faced with products that we have developed or developed by other sister departments, and be able to look at sustainability in a broader sense across the country, so to say. I will stop at that, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much, DG, and your team. Thanks to all of you again. And now we're going to seek your indulgence with us just for 2 minutes. We have to deal with the minutes of the last meeting. But before I do that, Honourable Members, allow me to say 2 things. The one is this question that was raised by Honourable Faber about the Chinese tourist guides. Honourable Faber, we are living in a global village, but we're going to struggle with those ones. Because at the moment, the immigration laws is that we will only give people a work permit if there is no South African skill in that particular industry or job. And therefore it makes it very difficult because we are sitting with a big problem of job security, job certainty. So let's just keep that in mind as we look at those particular challenges that we're faced with. We have heard yesterday that there is also a concern about the treatment of certain people within the tourism industry, where we're saying that there are people working in restaurants and in hotels that are treated unfairly. And many of them has to carry that burden because they are foreign nationals. And they deserve better treatment in terms of our labor laws. But we're also saying that we must guard against a situation where we sacrifice jobs for locals and bring in outsiders to take that on. The final point that I just want to say is more by way of an appeal, Honorable Members, that we appeal to you that when the department has these events in provinces, that we actually go there, because it's a two-way thing, where we're saying the department must report to us on what they're doing in provinces, but also for us when they have events there, for us to be present in it. I don't know, I could be wrong, but my reading of it is that in a number of events that the department has arranged in the last 30 months, we have not given the type of support that we could have given. It could be because we are very busy, but I think the polite thing to do would be then to inform the department so that we don't create misperceptions about our absence when events are happening within our provinces. Honourable Members, last item. We have the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 18th of October. Thank you, Honourable Ntebe, again. Honourable Ntebe. Martins, can we hold those things because now you're disrupting me. Honourable Ntebe, thanks very much for chairing that meeting for us. You will sign the minutes of that meeting. I'm just presenting it to the members for adoption. Page 1. I see an error there on page 1 next to Honourable Pakis. It's not said what party is from. You say to everybody else, so you must say it. And then you have the asterisk, but you're not saying what that asterisk means. So we'll just cover that as minor. Page 2, any changes? Page 3, that starts with the economic context, no changes.
I just want to say that the crowd was not
No, no, Honorable Faber, let me be serious now. No. Honorable Faber, let's stick to the minutes. There are times, there's a time for all these things. Page 3, page 4, page 5, there's nothing. Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the second
I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable seconded by Honorable Dikhale. Thanks very much. Honorable members, our meeting is adjourned. We will meet next week, Tuesday, in the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Thank you very much for your time.